There are more TV commercials being made than there was before. So there is more content out there. There's more screens. There's more stories to be told. There are more filmmakers than ever before as well. But there's more opportunities. And I think if people look in different places and aren't so trapped in the model of production company, agency, etc., you know, they are diversifying the ways that they make things. So we should be doing the same thing. Look in different places because the opportunities are absolutely there.
Hello and welcome to the Now Then podcast. In this special live episode, we sat down with some of the industry's leading voices to reflect on the past year.
We discussed the biggest challenges they face and how they overcome them, the importance of nurturing new talent, and what it takes to survive in a rapidly evolving industry.
This episode is sponsored by Gate Plus and produced by Jack Kirkwood.
Hope you enjoy.
Now then. Thank you so much for coming. This is like a little bit overwhelming. It's amazing to have an event like this and something that's not like we're showing anything. It's not like a visual thing. This is literally just people getting together and speaking. So it's pretty amazing that you've all come there. And we're really, really appreciative of it all.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible. And thank you to the Gate Plus for hosting this evening and being our official sponsors. They've helped so much.
Lovely.
We've got cue cards here.
Check your card, Craig.
Who are Ozzy and Craig?
Who are we? Me and Craig, basically we released an episode recently because we just wanted to give context about who we are.
Yeah.
We've known each of us since. We're from a small town up north called Pontefract in West Yorkshire. Woo! Northern.
Boom.
We've known of each other for a long time. Known we were into filmmaking and all that kind of jazz, and then we kind of reconnected in London. We moved in together.
We did. We did. The romance blossomed.
Very, very, very sweet.
Very
isn't it?
Sweet time.
And then we were put in a. We're both freelance directors. We were put in a freelance directors WhatsApp group, which consists of over 200 people. I was very reluctant to go into it. I was like, mate, I am not going into that group. Crazy. I think it's grown a lot more since I was there.
Yeah, it has.
But what we kind of felt from it was that it felt like there was a lot of lonely directors and they were kind of asking this group for help, and we kind of wanted to make a platform that could kind of make it feel less lonely, I guess, and make it feel like there is a community of people and we can all talk to each other.
And be vulnerable.
You know, because the worst thing is like, yeah, you know, someone come up to you and going like, hey, how's your year been? And
yeah, great.
Oh, yeah, exactly. The automatic response is that everything's fine when, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily, yeah. Especially as being freelance.
Exactly. And then, so we've been going a couple of years, aren't we, just doing it in our living room and then obviously with the Gate Plus. And then we had an idea to do an event, a bit of a live event with you guys and bring some guests, so... So shall we, the topic of today is how to survive in a rapidly changing industry.
Very official.
Big, big topic. And let's introduce the panel. So yeah. We have Mei Ling Wong, the EP as Spindle. We have freelance director Henry Littlechild. We have the head of talent and EP at Rogue Films, Charlie Robertson.
Trolls, we got Nena,
or Kodu,
head of music videos and EP at Magnus Studios. We have James Nicklarsen, director of creative production at the Gate Plus here. And we also have Lisa Green, creative production consultant.
Great. Well, let's get started.
I think let's get into it.
Nice.
Into this the deep dive of questions.
I guess first and foremost, from me, I kind of like wanted a show of hands in the audience and to our panel. Who found last year quite difficult?
And be really honest.
Yeah. Yeah, very stressful. And I guess that's where we want to start tonight is like for you guys who have agreed to come on the panel. Ooh. How did you find it? This year in your own roles within the production company and as a freelance. And let's direct this to the big man on my right, Charlie Robertson.
Well, these are only my opinions, okay? But I think it was a difficult. It was a difficult year. I think it's always a difficult year when you're trying to operate in a very competitive space. There's obviously more amazing filmmakers than ever before. It's been more democratized. Everybody has a way in. So, being competitive, I think, though, is a good thing. In some ways, there's obviously been more, there are more freelance directors. There are more production companies, and a lot of people are gunning for the same work. But I think the good thing is that there are more opportunities to work than there ever has been. I think trying to, you know, make a noise and make yourself noticed and all of that is the challenge. But I mean, part of that challenge is the thing that we embrace, and hopefully, by, you know, promoting the best possible work you can cut through.
So I guess moving on to this side, Henry, like in terms of your year as a freelance director, how have you found it?
I mean, I'm slightly different to everyone here, I guess. I'm a freelance director, so I'm speaking from my own perspective. I've got a slightly different take on it. Like, I'm not saying it wasn't a difficult year, but to me, it's always a bit like that. That's the game I'm playing. And actually, I approach it in exactly the same way. Like, actually, your approach to a difficult year should be the same as a good year, or it's always like that. Every year for me, it's always all over the place. Even in my busiest years, have times when I don't work and I question myself. It's very difficult to handle. But last year, I handled it in exactly the same way. And I have quiet patches, I have busy patches. Overall, it was a good year. I'm slightly embarrassed to say that now, but it was a good year.
Get out.
No. Fine, Jane. But but I guess what I've learned to do personally is to keep calm and actually not to panic. And I know that's easy to say, not to panic, because it doesn't matter who you are if you don't work for a certain amount of time. That's really difficult, of course. I totally get that, and I have those same feelings. But I guess what I've learned to do is over time just become calm and actually carry on doing those things and having some conviction in what I do. And that's actually, for me personally, that's worked.
So, Rubik, a bit of context. You are a freelance director now. You used to be represented by a production company.
Yeah, so I'm sort of a number of years in. I was signed to Outsider, who are quite a well-established production company. We're all probably quite similar in this respect. And at a certain point, it went a little bit, wasn't working so well. I left to become an independent director. And actually, that was a game changer for me, because I sort of learned to engage and how to not play the game, but I feel like it's made me more confident and calmer now.
What was the certain things you did when you initially left? What's the certain things you were like, right, this is what I need to do now? And how long ago was this?
This was 4 years ago or 5 years ago. To be honest, I did it. We've had this conversation already.
Yeah, yeah.
I sort of did it over because it was necessity. I just felt things were a little bit stale. I felt like I should make a change. I sort of went to see other companies that were equivalent and thought maybe that could work, but it just felt like I wasn't actually changing anything. It would be the same situation. So what I decided to do, and again, I was sort of forced into it a little bit, is just become independent and sort of try and get work or build relationships myself. And it just started off in a very basic way, kind of meeting people, having a coffee with someone I work with, just engaging and becoming more proactive. And actually, it sort of worked quite well straight away. And I didn't know loads of people. I'm not one of these people that knows hundreds of creatives. I don't go to Cannes. I don't go to festivals. I never do stuff like this, really. But I just kind of...
We forced him. Please. We need someone.
But it was just engaging and actually just kind of getting out there and sort of... I'd sort of left my comfort zone, and actually straight away it started. I'd sort of learned it can work in a different way, because where I came from, it was very much you had to be a production company. They fed you work. You sort of had to be grateful for it. You were relying on them. And for me, it ended up being an unhealthy dynamic. Like, I felt changing the dynamic was the important thing.
That's nice. It's funny, I've just done my taxes and the amount of coffees I got last year is crazy. I'm just kind of moving on to you, Mailing, at Spindle as well, because like your Spindle's such a growing company right now, and it's kind of like, for me, from the outside, it feels like it really nurtures new talent. Like, how have you been able to kind of survive this year as a production company, and what's been your approach to the last 12 months?
I'm going to start by saying that I've been at Spindle for almost 2 years now. And you're right, it's a really growing company. And I think that's been one of the challenges. You know, we do nurture new directors, and that's really difficult. And I think for me, I think finding the balance between the creative projects and keeping creativity alive and making money, I think that was the hardest this year or last year.
Yeah.
And I think we've tried to find the balance as much as possible. But for me, that was, yeah, I think my personal biggest challenge. And I'm sure it's many of yours as well.
It's finding that balance.
100%.
As a production company. So how does it feel for you then, Nana, being like, from being with Pulse previously and then starting this, I mean, Magna's only been going a year. How was that starting something completely fresh for a year?
Yeah, I mean, Magna was born this time last year and I joined. And so it was just a challenging year in general because it was like, who is Magna? What are we? Like, we had some directors from Pulse, we had new people, we had a new kind of team. So who is Magna and what do we stand for? And that is quite an exciting, but yeah, challenging year because what are you doing? And so, but we kind of got like found our feet pretty quickly. And it was a great year. It was a very, very great year. But also this kind of pressure for me personally, I'm so keen to sign and work with new directors. It's been the thing that's kept me excited about this industry since I first ever started. So, you know, encouraging people to support young talent, not just within Magna, but in the industry. Young is kind of I guess not the best word. It's emerging talent, or, you know, new talent, or maybe just different types of talent that aren't so traditional. And that has been something that is a challenge, but always, always pays off. So I think it's the most exciting thing about, you know, how Magna started, and definitely towards the end of last year, we really pushed to sign new people and it's paid off. So yeah, it was challenging, but good.
I just wanted to chime in there because Rogue's been going for 25 years, but we launched Rebel last year, which was, you know, a platform for breakthrough talent. So you're kind of, on one hand, you've got a production company that's completely established with established directors. And then at the same time, you're trying to, you know, promote and nurture and generate interest in emerging talent, which is proven difficult. You know, it's tricky, even if you have the support of a production company that's been going as long as we have them, do the amount of work that we do in the, you know, more mainstream commercial spaces. Well, how do you get people to take that punt in some ways?
Yeah, it's that thing, because obviously you're Rogue Films and you've got this Rebel that is like fostering new talent. But if you are a freelance director, it's like we keep saying, you got to really wave your own flag, haven't you? It's
massively. Like, I think more than ever.
But it's kind of like a way of like, how do I... So whatever, you make a piece of work, but it's kind of getting eyes on your work. So then it's thinking about how to package it up. And I feel like packaging is the most important thing because it's how we consume things online. And I know, me personally, I don't watch anything unless I've seen it 4 or 5 times. Flow past my feed, I'm like, all right, it's worth my attention.
That's why Chris knows so much about his own... No, exactly. I've seen it, mate.
Well, no, I actually get quite anxious about posting work. I hate posting work. Love making it. I hate posting it. So I guess from a freelance point of view, it's really fucking tough, isn't it? And you've got to be quite bold and quite... And you always say, Charles, you need to stand out from the crowd, don't you?
I mean, if you take the... I'll give you an example of some directors that we signed to Rebel, because the reason that I noticed them is because of their presence online. You know, now more than ever, directors have a broadcast channel. So you can actually put your own work out there to an audience. And, you know, they've got, you know, X amount of thousands followers, tens of thousands of followers, you know, and they did it all on their own. And I introduced them to production company and they're like, what's this? Like, they had no idea about the infrastructure, really, that we work with and the whole world of advertising and the industry. They were much more like, we make a thing, we put a thing out, we promote the thing, and we use the tools and technology that we have. So we're trying to introduce them to a different market. But in some ways, you know, they've done a lot of they've done all the legwork themselves.
But I was going to say, on top of that, like, obviously signing to a production company is not the end goal for everyone, and I think that should be more appreciated and accepted by production companies, definitely, by everyone, including agencies. They shouldn't see that if you're not signed, it doesn't mean that you haven't got, you know, you don't know what you're doing, etc. But I think you're so right. Having a presence, not necessarily, you don't even need to have tens of thousands of followers, but knowing how to present your work, knowing how to build a brand, it's kind of lame, but knowing how to build a brand as a director is so, so important. And even just dumb stuff like making yourself look busy, like post photos when you're on set. If you don't love the piece of work, you don't have to post it, but you can post the still so it looks like you've done work.
Do that all the
like
time.
Keeping looking busy.
But yeah. I agree with that.
Stops it.
So some of the things that perform best in our social media are behind the scenes stuff. They're like, yeah, great ad, so what? Let's see how it was made. And people really, really warm to the process and they want to learn about it. So, you know, you have got the tools available to promote yourself. And you
I kind of want to swing it to the post side with you, James, on you previously being at the Mill and then now coming with the Gate Plus. What was the things you found difficult last year that you feel like you're going to change for this year?
I was just enjoying that, sitting there listening.
Yeah, I saw you, mate. I saw you in the corner of my eye. I was like, you're not getting away with it, yeah.
You hear me? Yep. So the big thing for me was we decided to kind of jump from a really established legacy company that, you know, a couple of us have been there for close to a decade and jump into something different. And I think because the market has changed so much, and I think, you know, the tools are changing, how you make stuff is changing. And I think at the moment, we don't really know where this is all going. We, you know, and I think, you know, like Henry just talked about where he's been. We used to work with him a lot at MPC and the Mill. And I think the thing, again, that he did was, and not just this, but you established a type of work that kind of worked, particularly for both Mill and MPC, which was character work, and people came back for it. And I think that is where this is all going. It's, you still need to find your niche. And I think, you know, it's all about that value and what you do. And I just think there's a load of new tools that we just need to find a way to work with them.
Do you think like niche is important? Because I do think sometimes there's a lot of pressure on directors to feel like you need to find that niche. And the to be honest, like popular, right? Things keep changing and constantly evolving. But that's a lot of pressure, I think, sometimes on a lot of people. I mean, you know, a lot of directors will be like, right, this is my thing, but then...
Especially when it's not sellable niche. Is that your niche?
That's correct. Niche.
It's probably loaded.
Why doesn't no one want it? Well, but it's true, isn't it? It's really difficult to kind of like... to stand your ground on that because, you know, it's kind of like... I mean, even this year with you, Ozzy, like, obviously you've got your tone of voice, but... You've had a great year doing a lot of fashion work, and you're really great at it. But like,
thank you.
As an artist, though, your interests are elsewhere. So it's kind of like, I think you've kind of got to be a little bit fluid to kind of move a little bit.
I would say it's a horrible language to use, but if you think of you know, you are kind of micro brands as a director, and you do have to have your site or your Instagram or your whatever it is. And I think it's a really tricky thing, isn't it? It's remaining authentic to your niche or your thing, but being diverse enough that you can flex. And I think it's okay to flex and do other things as long as you can you hold on to your North Star, if you know what I mean. And that's there still. I think you can flex out and shapeshift a bit. It's okay.
Could you, Lisa, just for everyone here, just give a little context about like what your role is and what you do within the industry?
You got an hour?
Okay. Can you give me the diagram?
I've got a diagram for that I prepared earlier. So I started life in production originally in broadcast a long, long time ago, but then spent many years in broadcast, set up for creative, then jumped ship into ad agency land thinking it would be just the same. Got the shock of my life. It was really not the same culturally as broadcast. But I learned shitloads. Did that for a few years, then set up a production company that became part of an ad agency that was then sold a few years back. And since then, I now advise creative businesses. So sometimes it's like really, really small design studios
Sometimes it's a broadcast in-house agency at a broadcaster. Sometimes it's a big network agency. So really broad mix, which is what I like about it. So I see things from most angles. Sometimes I even work client side, brand side. So I also see it that side as well.
I like the way you described it on...
Former clue.
I like the way you described it on the call to me and Ozzy. You were like, basically, if your company's growing really quickly and you don't know how to handle it, you call me. If your company's about to go under and it's crumbling, you call me.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the kind of times where I'm brought in. Not exclusively, but it usually falls into one of those two patches. You know, we've got a problem. Either it's a high-class problem and we're growing at speed and we don't quite know how to handle it. Or it's a shitty problem, which is like, you know, we're having a really lumpy year or two, things we thought we would, you know, just hold on tight and it would get better and it hasn't. We think we've got to do something quite radical.
And I think also we kind of, what we wanted this we want this discussion to be positive. I can tell you're looking a bit tense there, Charlie.
Yeah, not at all.
I guess, like, from our point of view, like, we're always just talking about the passion of filmmaking and what we absolutely love about it. Like, what's this is a question for anyone. What kind of, like, motivates you guys and keeps you inspired, like, to work in our industry?
What part? Henry.
Oh, my God.
I missed out, didn't I?
I actually, like, when I don't labour the point too much, but when I became freelance, kind of invigorated me and I kind of reconnected. I almost, like, I was working for a number of years as a sign with a production company. It almost felt to me like, when I first started, I thought I'd be lucky to do this for, felt lucky to be able to do it full stop. And then I thought it's probably won't last very long. It will only kind of last a few years. I felt like I was sort of chancing it a little bit. And then I didn't get found out. I carried on going a bit, but then it sort of felt like maybe it was stopping or it was kind of winding down. The work wasn't so good and it was less of it. I thought, oh, maybe this is it. This is it. And I almost kind of, I didn't accept that, but I thought, okay, it's worth a roll of the dice because of that. And actually, when I became independent, it made me sort of reconnect again. Like, it's really made me engage and I care about it more than I do, than I did. And actually, I guess what I tried to do is become better as well. Because, of course, all these things of being flexible and having, you know, it's good to have a thing as a director. It's good to be flexible as well and be able to do different things. And again, just being independent, I felt like I could do that more. Like I did jobs that I probably, I don't know if it's the same for you, but I did jobs that I probably wouldn't have got if I was an outsider. And I was just a bit more manoeuvrable, and that really helped.
Did that come from, like, not knowing that there wasn't a production company in the background, going out there, doing the meetings, waving your flag, putting the your reel around with people? Did you then go, like, right, I need to do that now. I need to look at myself.
Yeah, totally. Like, I actually went to see James. James was one of the people I went to see who I didn't know. Someone said, oh, he, you know, suggested I meet him and just doing things like that. And actually we worked together. And that all came from before I was looked after, before it was very much...
Wrapped in cotton wool.
Yeah, exactly. So even kind of engaging a little bit and thinking about what I wanted to do and what are the things I... What were my attributes? What are the things I could do better? And how could I sort of... one thing that did really help was just working with different people. I found that so refreshing.
I think that was part of our advice, though, wasn't it? You were kind of, what do I do? Do I look to be repped again? And I think we were kind of NPC pretending not to be a production company, but doing, you know, and we would say, look, our thing isn't about, it's not about, it's more about how we solve the entire problem. And it was like, you know, it's obviously to do with like the whole process. And we were like, we probably can't rep you individually and you should go and have a look. And I think it kind of worked for you in that way. And I think that's what I'm saying. It evolved from that because you found a thing. And I think just going back to that question of creativity at the moment, I think it has become a bit samey. And I think we are all scared of going into the ship, but it's actually really exciting because that's what creativity is about. And I think the fact that we're scared is creativity again. I mean, we're back to this thing where VFX and, you know, is the thing that has evolved over the last 10 years or 15 years, you know, was where I started. It's very normal now. You know, we all know how to do it. Everybody's, and I think that's what 2025 offers, is a whole new perspective. And whether in production, companies out of production, it's just about, you know, who gets the best content out there.
Is that what, like, that's what inspires you or motivates you, is kind of the unknown of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was, I know I don't look old enough, but I was around when, you know, 3D started, and we were having the argument at the time that it's never going to take off and nobody's going to use it, and, you know, it's going to destroy the industry, and, you know, and now it's a bit like, you know, it's a bit tight. You know, if you want to do a CG line, you could do a CG, you know, it's that thing. And I think we haven't mentioned AI yet, and we've been good.
Oh, we're getting that.
No, but it's, you know, the thing that we spent a long time developing is that kind of photorealism. And I think the opportunity now is to do something that's different and outside of that. And, you know, that's going to be the norm, you know, to do something that looks so super, super real. This is where our AI is going to get. But the thing that the directors and the creators are going to do is stuff that just excites you. And that's the opportunity.
I think it, again, just to be kind of super open with you guys, like, it's always difficult, like, finding a really good project to kind of get your teeth into. And it's interesting, last year, actually, because I had probably the worst year of like, my career last year. Probably, yeah. I actually found myself on a building site for a few weeks with my younger brother, just kind of moving tiles, do you know what I mean? But it's funny kind of, like, what being on the bottom does for you, because it kind of realigns your focus. And out of it, I kind of... So me and my brother don't get along, but on this job, me and my brother started talking again, just grunting at each other, and then we started talking to each other and talking about how we absolutely hate each other and how we, like, grew up and we used to fight a lot. And out of that, like, really shit time last year, kind of made this little personal film. But maybe it's just bias because it's my film and I love it, but it's like, it's a really intimate piece. And James, producer I'm working with, mentioned this the other day. He's like, you'd have never made that film unless you were absolutely on your ass. Do you know what I mean? It's like, sometimes, like, the most beautiful films that you make are the ones that, like, you don't expect to make. So I feel like the roller coaster of the industry is like, you never just kind of sat on the top of the castle and, like, sweet, completed it. It's kind of like, as a director, I think you've got to be open to being absolutely broken and seeing something in that time and making sure you can kind of come through it. And hopefully when you make stuff like that, it connects with people. And that's what it's all about. It's all about connection. It's all about going into a room with an agency and going, I'm going to show you a piece of work. You've got no idea who this guy is, but hopefully at the end of it, you're going to feel something. So I think the process of creativity is never black and white. And I think as emotional directors, I think you should just try and lean into the good and the bad.
And that's where the laziness is going to come from, I think, is like, you're going to get a load of people that think that this stuff is good, and there's going to be probably 6 months of really terrible content coming out that's, you know, being made by, you know, well, you know, I've written the script and I've done that. That's not what we're all here to do. And I think that's exactly right. It's about, like, it's about the fear and, like, testing this stuff, and it still doesn't do it. It still doesn't get what's in your head to screen. It takes a lot of work, and it's never going to do that. Sorry,
and I just wanted to jump in because I've seen Craig's film, and to the point about, you know, you asked the question of what is it that does motivate you, you know, in this industry. And I'll be honest with you, his film's incredible. And that's the type of thing that definitely motivates me. You know, yes, we have got all the technology that it is democratized, putting in, you know, all the VFX that weren't normally available. But actually, really, if you're a director, you're a storyteller, and there are as many stories out there as there are people. And so particularly if you're able to tell a story that has that really innate human, emotional, authentic thing, not done in a pursuit of authenticity, but really done from a place of, I got to tell my story, it cut through. And you can have all of the tropes and you can do all of the technique and you do all of the things that say, wow, but really an audience is really drawn to something which elicits an emotional response. So I think it was a great film, Craig, and I really think that that's the type of thing that people do respond to and will always respond to.
Totally agree.
Thank you.
Totally. And also just in terms of like kind of AI and the use of AI in filmmaking, I think it, basically what you said, Charlie, is like it always comes that it's never telling a human insight to the level that a human can tell. And I think this is an obvious thing that people are talking about a lot, but I really truly believe that people need to stop using, we basically have the power to gatekeep, we have the keys to what AI can do right now. Like everyone's like, oh, AI, we're scared of AI, but then continues to use AI for everything, script writing, storyboards, you know, treatments, briefs.
Questions for a podcast.
Questions for a podcast, answers for a podcast. So it's really important.
And the answers.
It's really important that we, as the people who are scared and continuously to be scared, make sure that we keep those, some of those gates closed and protect some things, to, you know, for humans. And as everyone says, AI can be doing my admin and can, you know, compile my pensions and I will do the writing. So I think it's really important that we don't rely too heavily on it, specifically for the idea side. I think technical and execution, it's a great tool, and I think we should continue to explore it as a tool to aid creativity rather than guide and lead the creativity, which is the fear that a lot of people have, I think.
I think it'll reach a tipping point, though, where it, if it doesn't resonate with consumers and audiences, then it'll stop getting used really quickly, because suddenly brands will go, oh, hang on a minute, we thought we were saving a lot of money by doing all of that via it. And actually, our data tells us now it's not resonating, because humans, us watching things, we like wonkiness, right? We're drawn to wonky things and weirdness and quirky stuff because we're human. And already there's an underlying kind of backlash, you know, of like, oh, that face is not a normal human face, is it? And I think at some point, once big corporations go, oh, hang on, that marketing campaign didn't work for us, why is it not resonating? Well, it's not resonating because they don't look like a fucking human. And, you know,
turn them into a cat.
It will. The difficulty for creative humans like you is riding that, because that's going to take a while for that to work through, and for that us to come out the other side. But I'm sure we will, because I just know humans like wonkiness.
It's true, but I think the fear, I don't want to say fear, but the concern is that eventually they will look like humans, and eventually they will make it look like it was shot on 16mm and that it was all shot real on site, you know, on location. Eventually it will look like that, and we have to basically, and we're never going to stop it completely because it's coming, but I think we have to use it in the right ways and avoid using it to do everything, because then we do become obsolete. So we're in control right now.
I agree with you, but then at the end of the day, it's not so much just that you can use it as a tool to make it look like and make it appear like, but it's very difficult to make it feel like. So I think that as a director and as a storyteller, the essence has always got to be in the story, and the other, and all of the other things can help you and aid you to articulate it. But as a director, always feel faith in what your story is.
I think I agree on that one, because I think also I think what I'm drawn to, even when like I watch feature films and see a struggling director finally make a film, is like I'm more drawn to like the struggle to get it made. No, the story behind it. Well, yeah, the story behind it, you know, and that's part of it. That kind of carves character, especially in everything you make. Do you know what I mean? So, and with AI, I don't think you've got that. You've not got the
skill. The outcome was necessary. For the journey built the outcome, and the outcome you feel in it without even necessarily knowing where it came from. You don't need the story to feel the answer of it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Would you ever watch something and go like it made it better knowing that because you know the backstory from something? Like for me, it does. Like, you know, now I think more and more it's becoming, you want to know the backstory. And really, the backstory makes it better. Like knowing that a film like, say, The Brutalist was made for under $10 million, I mean, you go, whoa, that makes it loads better. You know, but not knowing that, like, I don't know. I think knowing that makes me appreciate it more. But I think they use that. It's used now as marketing. Like, that's the main thing. Like, look how we made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it should be. I think that's our advantage, is like using who we are as whatever artist. I mean, James, you were telling me every day that James Cameron were living in a car, and then he, you know, got offered $1 million for the Terminator script, and he refused it because he wanted directing it. And I think that's what we love. We love the human stories. And I think it's important to, if you've got one and you're selling a piece of work, if you've got a backstory behind it as well, like, pop that in an email, because people connect with that stuff. Like, people connect with why you've made it and the struggle, and I guess just like, you know, that nice natural place of where it comes from.
It's actually interesting. You just brought up The Brutalist, and Magna just signed Brady Corbett, which is very exciting. But he's just recently been talking about the back to what we're talking about, by identity and brand and da, 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 like, to get Oscar noms or to get BAFTA noms, it's the same thing as in our industry. Like, it's all the same industry, really, isn't it? But there's all the press and all of the PR you do around that is actually what gets you the nominations, as much as, so a low budget film, yeah, it's a low budget film, like that. It's actually more around how you promote this film than it is about the actual film sometimes. So,
yeah, it all comes back to packaging, doesn't it? Moving on to 2025, how are you guys approaching this new year? What's your fresh approach on the year? Mailing, let's go.
You did survive last year.
Let's keep going.
I mean, that's it. That's exactly it. I think we did survive last year. I mean, I think we've got so many things to be excited to, like, for 2025. We've signed a bunch of really amazing new directors, I'm sure everyone else has. And I think it's just the push to make amazing work. Like, I've just come from a shoot today where I did a £1,000 rap video, not because I necessarily wanted to, although I did. But I think it's just that need to just make, constantly keep making and creating, and it's going to be a good year. Go on, you.
Charlie?
No, I agree completely, because being a director is not really, it's not normal employment. It's not a job, is it? You don't go to work every day and come home. You kind of have to do it because it's like a compulsion. You do it like you play guitar. Do you know what I mean? If you know what I mean? You're a musician.
You only know five chords.
And then you never end up in a band, but that's okay. You still play. But yeah, if you're a director, go and make stuff. Exactly. You've got all the tools there. I'm excited for this year and all the possibilities, because, well, maybe it's because it's January and everyone's like, it could be like anything. But before doing this, I looked into some statistics as I was like trying to form some opinions about things I might say. I was like, what do I think? But it turns out that, you know, ad spend is up. It's up 9%. Over 1 month of last year, it was up. There were more TV commercials being made than there was before. So there is more content out there. There's more screens. There's more stories to be told. And I think one of the things I just wanted to say is that I think everyone feels the pressure, because they're like, you know, we're all scrambling. And I think there are more filmmakers than ever before as well. But there's more opportunities. And I think if people look in different places and aren't so trapped in the model of production company, agency, etc., you know, they are diversifying the ways that they make things. So we should be doing the same thing. Look in different places, because the opportunities are absolutely there.
And is that what you guys have been doing more on a production side? Have you guys been like, you know, because more and more times a script comes in and maybe there's not a director who you know you could get the job. Do you look elsewhere to bring an unsigned director in, or a freelance director, an independent director, to pitch on something? Have you found yourself doing that more last year than before?
Yeah. I mean, maybe not before. I meet so many directors, and I make it like one of my, you know, every week I'll try and meet someone or connect. They might be not in the UK, or it might just be on Instagram, but it's so important to build that network. And I have like a network of probably 50 directors outside of our signed directors that I keep in mind. Some are super niche, like super niche. And I might get one project with them in 10 years.
Very specific script comes up. I'll think of you.
I've got you. That's why I met you. Look at you, I'm good. But like even today, one kid is so patronizing, but some very, very, very young director who is such a talent, just pure VFX, all on his own. He just hit me up asking for a grade. I met him like 6 months ago, but we stayed in touch. And having that like massive network of people, some that are too young to be signed because they literally have one piece of work and we may never be able to get them something. So it's good to be there and maybe help them and guide them, but it might not be useful for them. Or some really solid, very, very like busy directors. They might not want to be signed to a production company. They might know what they want and they want their own freedom, but they might then, you know, get $1 million, $2 million job in and be like, it'd be better to run this through a production company. So I think it's so important. And I think most production companies, good ones, will have a network of people that they're either nurturing or just collaborating with outside of their like signed roster. And it's important.
We were talking about, are you jumping in there, Henry?
I was going to say, just touching on that, like I feel like the landscape has changed so much just in the last 5 years that I'd say 5 years ago, if you were a decent director, you would be at one of 5 or 10 production companies. And that's, we're so far from that now. Like the landscape is completely different and it's evolved and you can do things in a different way. And that's going to change again, I think. At that, where we are now, it's not going to be like that in 2 years. Time is really hard to predict. It's like ever evolving, which of course is it's totally a positive thing.
Yeah.
It felt like things did need shaking up to me.
That's what I was just going to say. I think it's a tricky question because I often come across directors who are in the burgeoning point in their career, and it's always a case of, well, we haven't made anything together. I want to be able to deal with a number of different production companies, and if a project comes in, I want to be able to work with them. And I think it makes perfect sense. Obviously, a production company has a responsibility to the directors that are assigned to them because you put in time and effort in building reels, and sometimes financial investment and all of those things, whether it's just showing people's work in places. But I'm also, I'm aware that you've got to kind of utilize all the opportunities you have. If you're a director, particularly on the way up, why would I get into bed straight away, so to speak?
But you guys must feel the pressure from the signed directors a little bit. Or do you? Maybe not. Like,
no.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like if you have a lot of people in your roster, but then you've reached out to an unsigned director, you're not rostering to do a script. Do you feel any backlash from that?
I
was going to say, I think as long as there's always rhyme or reason to it, like if I literally look at a script and I'm like, oh, this doesn't suit any one of our directors, you know, directors are understanding. You just have that conversation, you keep it open with them. But yeah, from...
Nana's just nodding, but yeah.
So understand.
Very understanding.
Okay, ish. Understanding-ish. I just think you have to keep that open dialogue. And, you know, for me, I think just squirrel it away. I think if we're talking about completely, it all depends project to project. Like if I'm going for a passion project with an unsigned director, I'm sure I'm going to feel it a lot more. But I think if it, you know, we all need to make money. So I think sometimes if you're just trying to do that and it's like a bit of a run-of-the-mill advert and you can all be in agreement of that, then I think that's fine. But Spindle's kind of ethos at the moment is really nurturing talent. Like we've recently... not publicly signed, can I say this? I can say this. But we've been nurturing her. She had one short film on a reel and then just shot her first advert last week. Yeah.
And amazing. Wicked.
But yeah, I mean, it's persistence and, you know, we don't have the capacity to completely go off roster all the time. But I think when you can see it working, and I can see her being on the reel, we all can. We can all see her being on the roster and that's why you've got to push
for it. So it's a hard job for you guys then to sell that person in. If that person got one thing, it's like, how do you then... It's hard enough... You know they're good. It's hard enough convincing people in a room. No?
Totally.
Huh?
I've
got to think outside the box. Okay.
Tell us. What is it?
Well, I guess, how do you sell yourself?
I don't know. Hey, he threw that on me, didn't he, then? That's tight.
I did throw that on you.
Yeah, you did.
Because that's the other thing is, like, you were saying, you're thinking... you were thinking outside the box of, like, you know, there's so many... Whether you're a filmmaker working in commercials or you're doing a corporate gig or you're doing Talking Heads or whatever, like, it's about making money at the end of the day. And if you're not making money, it's stressful. And you can't be creative if you're skint because there's so much pressures that kind of surround that. Even if that's just going for a beer at the pub, you're like, maybe I'll save that one. You know, it's kind of like... So as a production company, I feel like... Charlie, you just said you're looking for new ways to kind of get new clients and new brands and get directors in the room. But as a freelance director, it's exactly the same thing. I don't think there's any safety net in being with a production company. Or are you solo? It's the same thing. You're just having to do it yourself. You're really good at that, unknowingly. You're really good at selling yourself, because I think it's not about screaming about new pieces of work you're putting out. I think it's just about being present and like being in people's minds. And like you said, that like it might just be a BTS photograph, but if it can be something a little bit more subtle, like a Now Then panel. But you know what I mean? It's about being present, and it's about being involved in conversations, and also just like being on people's minds. So I think that's something to think about as a filmmaker of, all right, how to...
That's right, but you can do that in different ways. You could,
exactly.
You can make a good piece of work. And
yeah, totally. Yeah. But I mean, you say make a good piece of work, but it sometimes doesn't always present itself. And I found myself in one place, like a couple of years ago, it were a year before I made something that I were really proud of. So yeah, you can make a piece of work, but you've also got to think about the other things about to stay on people's radars as well. And being a nice person is also a good thing.
I think being a nice person is really important. No one wants to work with a wanker, right? So, you know, wherever possible, try not to be like a wanker. But I think that thing you were talking about of like getting out and about, and, you know, it's like, it sounds, I mean, it makes me feel sick in my, like, here, the concept of networking, right? But if you, you were shot.
Get used to it.
We're doing podcasts.
But I love having a chat, and I love meeting interesting people. So it's like reframing it, you know. And it never ceases to amaze me when I force myself to go and network.
It really works.
Works because you're bound to end up having a chat with someone really interesting. And it might not seem obvious in the moment, but that might be an interesting connection that takes you somewhere you never thought you might go to. And I think that's the other thing I would say is you might have a vision of kind of, right, I'm a director, I want to do that. But actually doing that is fine. Don't beat yourselves up. Don't feel bad about that. And actually, until you go and do a bit of wiggly lining, you might discover and learn things along the way that serve you really well later on.
Don't you think that wiggly line is, because you just touched on the silos of production companies, don't you think we're all kind of going through this weird wiggly line of where it all evolves anyway? Though, you know, it's all becoming production focused, everything, isn't it? It's all becoming more like it's a production company and agencies have got production companies post as it, yeah. But ultimately,
uncertainty is normal now. Yeah. And I think we all have to just get comfortable with uncertainty. And everyone has it. Everyone has like high moments and then like, shit, I've got no work. You know, and it's learning to be comfortable with that, I guess.
Yeah, uncertainty. It's, I feel like for me, kind of like, you find focus with that.
You get pushed into the corner to do it.
Exactly. Yeah, you get pushed into a corner.
No choice, mate.
How do I get out of here? And suddenly all your focus, when you're doing great, you kind of lose that focus on personal projects and stuff you really want to do. And I guess meaningful projects, maybe? I don't know. But I think sometimes when you're backed in a corner, you kind of focus narrows and you're like, all right, what's important and how do I get out of here? And I don't know, it's kind of good for your character as well. You kind of learn a lot about it. I feel like you never really learn a lot about yourself.
It doesn't matter who you are. You're going to go through that.
Yeah.
For sure. You're not going to sail through. No one is. I mean, some people have good runs or have get lucky breaks, but unless you can navigate those things, you're not going to last very long at all. And it's the same with a production company. It's going to evolve or whatever it is. It's the industry. It changes all the time.
Yeah.
And I think I'm incredibly positive. I feel like there's still amazing opportunities to be had. One thing I just wanted to say, when I started, I had so many people say to me, I've picked completely the wrong time to do this. It's terrible. It's like not like it used to be. There's too many companies, there's too many directors. And we're actually saying similar things today. Like it's almost like, oh, we're not being gloomy, but it's like, it's tough and it's always been tough. And I actually kind of got annoyed with being told that so much. I didn't ignore it, but I thought, okay, I'm just going to try and carry on and do the best I can. And I zigzagged. And actually, that was okay. That was a good approach. And I'm glad I did that. And I've had, since then, I had periods where it didn't work for me. And I nearly gave up at one point and I carried on. I picked myself up. And you know, like, I kind of, I'm proud to be still working and that I did do that. Like, I'm still standing in some capacity.
Totally. And it's
going to be positive, sorry.
It's, I think it's so important to be positive because it's so true. I remember when I first started at BBH when I was an ad producer, and all the producers were like, "Oh, you've come at the wrong time. This, we used to be smoking at the desks and partying by four." I was like, wow, I did come at the wrong time. But it's always been this, like, oh, the harking back to the old days. But there is something exciting about what's happening now. I think there is a challenge of, like, it's so amazing to make it as a director right now. It's so great that people do it. I think it's a shame that the industry feeling very difficult means a lot of people that should be doing this aren't doing it. They've taken some other route, whether it's still in the creative industry and, you know, graphic designer or an editor or whatever, which is still incredible, but they might not be following their true passion because it is such a sacrifice and it's such a risk. And not everyone, you know, you guys aren't from London. It's not being from London or not being from a, you know, a wealthy background or not being from a certain ethnicity or whatever it might, or being female, whatever it is. It's super difficult. So I think it's such a great, you should be so proud to be doing this. I think it's so amazing for everyone that's doing it and they're fighting and hustling to do it now, and continue to be positive. I so, so agree with you. Like, there are so many exciting things about this year, and there's embracing those new, those embracing AI, embracing the fact that we need to be doing 15 seconds. Like, don't see it like a purist, like, I want to be making The Brutalist 3 hours. Like, let's think, what can you do with this rather than, oh, I'm forced to do it like this. Like, there are, it's exciting, and you know, you can still be a purist filmmaker and you shoot everything 35 on your own projects and push for it in ads if they've got the money. But yeah, try and get the money for the projects, money jobs, and then invest that in the, you know, creative jobs, and also try and get the money creative jobs, which is the
one thing.
I think that, Nana.
The one thing to add on that is never have any creator been able to make stuff so easily now. You know, that's the thing. Like, before, you talk about shooting on film, you know, like, it was very elitist. Now, you know, 15-year-old kids at home are making content. You know, whether it's good or not, it depends on that. But that is the opportunity, and that is the point of, like, actually now. And I think you're exactly right. You've just got, to make stuff. You know, you've got to make stuff, and you've got to show stuff, and you've got to get that profile. However you make it, the audience and the market are going to, they're actually going to decide whether it's good or not. You know, not even us. We're going to go, and we're going to scratch our chins and... But if it sells something, you know, that's going to be ultimately what is going to decide this.
I think that, I think there's definitely a positive edge to this year. I mean, I feel it. Do you feel it?
Yeah, sure.
So far.
So far.
I really hope this has not been doom and gloom. I think the whole point
of this...
We're
trying to keep it very positive.
Yeah, it's to be positive, but, you know, also just, like, lay some stuff down. Maybe kind of moving on to the... Were you going to say something?
No, I was just reacting to you, mate.
All right.
Always.
I was going to say advice moving forward.
Well, I one of our questions is advice moving forward, but I feel like you guys kind of just summarised that really, really well. I feel like.
But let's ask the question. Advice moving forward into 2025. Anna, what are you saying?
For directed at who?
I don't even think it needs to be, like, specifically with directors. No, I think it's, like, general creative and filmmakers in general, like... perspective on.
Oh
yeah, I think the threads all touch each other, don't they?
I think it's, for me, a massive focus for me personally, and advice to myself, I guess, is the best way to do it, is to come out at the end of the year having made projects that I am extremely proud of, with directors that have grown in the year. Like, we've signed a few people, a young talent called Tanner K. Williams, who's also incredible. And I want to, by the end of the year, see him grow. And advice to myself is to push through and continue to, you know, don't get bogged down by everyone wanting the same three directors all the time. I feel like that's come back around. There was this kind of grasp and excitement for diversity and new voices, which has kind of sunken away a little bit. But push forward with that. Continue to push for new voices and interesting voices and different storytelling, and open your mind. Like Charlie said, like, there are different places to get work. Like, every publication, every brand, every, you know, everyone has a white label agency. Like, I was in a bird watching collective that had an agency on the side. I'm like, what? And they were making money. I think every single company has a secret agency that they've all got work. So I think opening my mind up, keeping like eyes open to what's new, what's coming out, not just being kind of bogged down in, you know, traditional routes of client to agency to production company. Yeah.
Nice. Melling?
Well, it's really annoying going after Nena, isn't it? Like, literally.
I'm just yapping.
I'm literally like all the same. Yeah, I think it's just keep focused on yourself and just always find that passion. Again, going back to, like, let's push to have those directors that are traditionally making ads, like, make them do a music video or a really fucked up weird short film, you know? Just try and spice up a little bit and just, I don't know, get through the year, basically.
What was the question?
Well, in terms of what to look forward to for this year, we're saying for me personally.
I think personally,
yeah.
Well, I think you know, as I mentioned, we launched Rebel last year, and it's been an amazing journey being at Rogue, because over the last sort of 5 years I've been there, it's been a kind of a rebranding of a company that's existed for quite a long time. You know, I think number one tools of sales is acquisition. So in as much as anything, acquiring an amazing roster of talent has been rewarding, because it turns out it's been largely successful. I think that when with Rebel, I think the challenges still stand. So for me, what would make me, you know, what would be a success for me would be to see that those directors that come from a bit more of an obscurity to be recognized for the talents they have and to be successful in music videos and commercials. And of course, you know, we are trying to develop long form or whatever it is. You know, being a director is not just being a commercials director. It's being somebody that is a storyteller and puts things on film. So find out wherever those opportunities are and help develop and grow them and get them recognition.
Lovely.
Henry.
I feel like this is getting harder and harder, isn't
here
it?
Here he is.
I'm going to leave. Callie, for you, James. This year, I mean, I always have quite kind of modest ambitions. I mean, I love what I do. I guess what I love most about it is just the process and working with people. And if I can make something that I'm happy with, I feel there's value in, I don't want to say as small as that for me, but that's what I'm trying to do all the time. And maybe I'm not actually looking forward through the whole year. I just trying to get that next thing. That's what I'm thinking about.
Job to job.
And I don't mean like, you know, I do think about where I'm going, but I don't kind of dwell on that too much. You know, it's hard winning jobs.
So small wins.
Yeah. And then actually I get a lot of satisfaction from that. If I work and make a few things this year that I'm proud of, that will be a good year. That's my aim.
Great.
Call you, sir. What are you telling them when you go in the production companies?
I think for me, it's just keeping inspired. And how I keep inspired is learning. So as long as I feel I'm learning, then I feel like I'm going forward and I'm moving, there's momentum. The moment I sort of stop learning, I feel like I'm stagnating in some way. And so that's my thing, is always like be open to learning and be open from anywhere and anyone. That's my thing.
Yes. I'm going to go for global domination. No. I mean, we've just done quite a mega thing. We've just left a company and we're 2 months into Gate Plus. So I think that's our focus for this year. It's, don't necessarily follow traditional, make stuff, you know, like I think challenge ourselves. And I think that's where I see the next year going.
Nice. It's feeling a bit uncomfortable, isn't it? It's not feeling too comforted.
Yeah.
I guess we should put it out to...
Yeah, we wanted to like ask the audience if you guys had any questions.
Any questions for any panelists?
Show of hands for any of the panelists? Oh no, not that guy there. Anyone else?
You just asked everybody else
what's the question. Oh no. So the question's been put back on us.
Yeah, what's 2025
for? I mean, for the podcast.
Yeah.
Oh mate, I definitely feel like we take it very step by step, right?
Yeah, this is...
I feel like this is such a privileged position.
Weirdly, we get a lot of production companies trying to, like, bring directors onto the podcast, actually, which is great. But I think from our point of view, we want to keep it personal and just get conversations that we kind of want to have on there, really, that we think, like, people like you would love.
And that we're interested.
Yeah, and challenge. You know, sometimes I think we want to create a safe environment for people to be vulnerable, but I guess sometimes we listen to it back and go like, oh, man, we didn't challenge that person enough.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that because we wanted them to feel comfortable and yeah. to, you know,
yeah.
like we're attacking them.
Yeah. And I might start not cutting as many swear words out of the podcast.
Craig does a lot of editing when he gets hold of
F's and Jeff's.
F's and Jeff's and ums and ahs and breathing loud, actually.
Yeah, a lot of breath. Yes. Anyone else have any questions in the audience? Oh, very scared.
You're all pretty boring. What?
Bella?
My question is probably to the producers. You were talking about it being niche, like people having niche talents. Are we going to see more collaborations then? Is it something you guys think about when you have a roster of directors and you're like, you're given a script or you're given a brief? And is it something you think about, oh, actually, we've got a great VFX and should they actually be speaking to that person because they're really good at human emotion stories?
That was our model before, and exactly that. We felt that we had to bring people together to do it. So, yeah, that's what we saw was that ability. It was probably less of a kind of storytelling script that we would do, but exactly that. We would kind of find a team and we'd go, how do we solve this thing as a collective?
It would be my dream to have two of my directors on opposite ends of the scale work together. But I think the kind of people that we're working, they have such clear visions of their own. I genuinely think directors are kind of lone wolves unless you're a duo, but you have your vision. I think it is really hard to put two together. I've wanted to do it so many times, but I don't think they want to.
I mean, I definitely think it's benefit. It happened to me once, basically at the end of being signed to a production company. It was an animation job, but it has live action in it. So they stuck me together with an animation director who had not done any live action, and we combined and won the job and did, you know, and it was like, actually, we both learned so much from it and we were both convinced to do it. And I was like, well, I've just learned loads about animation. I've got animation on a reel. They've just learned about live action. They've got live action on the reel. And it was amazing. Like, it was, I think it should be encouraged more, really. If a script comes in and you can see two people and combine them,
and the behind the scenes and watching Ozzy talk about it, that's amazing as well, by the way. Need to watch that one.
Well, I think that's the case. I think it works sometimes, and especially in that dynamic where you're talking animation and live action, because you're both from different kind of ends of the spectrum. I have done it before, not naming names, but where it's not gone right, because I've had two live action directors and I've been like, oh fuck, you know, regret my
two directors don't always work well together.
Yeah, exactly. Two wrongs don't make a right. Yeah.
Neither for a podcast most of the time.
Yeah, fucking hell. Any other questions from anyone else? Yep.
What creative things have inspired you recently, like movies or TV shows or ads? You know, what have you?
Yeah, what's getting people going?
Apart from traitors, obviously. Apart from
TV, yeah. Traitors, it's wicked.
But yeah, is there a film or something special that you've watched recently that has inspired you?
Yeah, Charon?
Well, I have to say, everyone should watch Craig's film. I mean, I think it, as far as short films go, and I mean, I genuinely mean it, it was one of the first things that I saw this year that I thought, you know, it cut through. I also saw a short film called Marion, which was directed by Joe Wayland, which I thought was an incredible short film. I've been watching a lot of short films, and oftentimes you go, oh, well, there was a really big idea that was made too small, a really small idea that was made too big. And when you see a short film that just hits that sweet spot, you go, that really is kind of filmmaking for its own sake, and if it works, it's brilliant.
But what was it about those films that really was like, ah, that's hit me? That was it, because it's different from what you're seeing, or
because it wasn't overcomplicating an innate emotional point that you got? I get it. It didn't fart around trying to give you too many things. Here's all the ideas I've got in one go, and let's try and pack them into this thing. Or here's a kind of small idea that really was only about 90 seconds worth of idea, and I've turned it into a short film because I've got loads of people to work for me for free. Basically, you know what? Let's drag it out. So it's so often for me, the best short films are almost as good as a scene. You know, if you can write a really good scene and get to the essence of what a story is, you've probably got a really good short film.
But can you when you see a short film, can you see, I know what they're trying to do, like, can you see, say, with like the commercial landscape at the moment, and you're seeing like wide angles and fucking cameras going into eyeballs and at your bum and whatever, can you see something and you go, they're trying to get an ad?
That's a whole different thing.
Can you see it and go like, they're trying to get an ad? Because that will put you off.
True.
If you can see a purpose from it.
Anyway,
well, I feel like short films are there to get you an ad or to proof of concept for a feature, which you literally need nearly all the time to get the funding. Not always, but most of the time, as that seems like. So to make one that is just purely a short film and serves a purpose as a short film, you have, like, it's rare, I think. And I think, you know, some amazing short films are a scene from a feature and they work really well, but they've, you know, they've been kind of molded slightly to work in that format rather than, but yeah, I also agree. There's times where you see something, you're like, this is purely ad bait, and that's also,
but then that's a spec, isn't it? Like, I don't know.
But what's your opinion on specs then? Like, if someone's making a spec ad, would you encourage it or not encourage it? It's a hard question, sorry.
And I think it's dependent on who the director is. We've done it successfully recently where we've done a spec commercial and actually managed to send it into the agency who's then sold it into the client. I'm sorry.
I just say, well done.
Thanks. I think they can work, and I think especially like short storytelling. I think if you're going to go and do a short film, do a bloody short film. Make it good. Be captivating. Tell me a story. And I want to see the director in that film. You know, I've seen, there's a few directors here tonight. I've watched their short films, and I'm never watching you thinking, oh, you're trying to make an advert, because then I'm not interested in that short film. It's not even a short film.
But it's got to be entertaining, and it shouldn't be overindulgent, because I know the temptation to make a short film is, I've got the resources, let me make an epic. You haven't got time to do that. So I think work out why you're making it. It's not that you to get an advert, but to get the attention of the people that are behind commissioning adverts. They want to see that you can tell a story quickly and succinctly, and always keep in mind what the purpose was. Is it to win awards? Is it to get commercials? Is it because I fucking want to?
Cool. Any more questions in the audience?
Oh, Harry's got one behind you.
Harry?
Everyone spoke a bit earlier about clout, essentially, like Instagram following and all this sort of stuff. And I think, do we feel like clout can get in the way of good work? Like, is that becoming more and more important? Because obviously, like, there's directors' work I'm, like, massive fans of, and I think make amazing work and have clout. They're really zeitgeisty directors who I think operate in that space. But do we think that for agencies and creatives becomes sometimes more important than actually the work, or do we feel like it's kind of a necessary evil in a way?
Isn't that the brand thing you were talking about, though? It's, if it works for them and it gets them the work, it's a good thing. I think, you know, it's to each individual.
But do we think it's getting in the way? Like, I'm not saying it is. I'm just curious as to how you guys perceive it in terms of directors that maybe don't have that following. Like, if you look at a director who has kind of got work that you like but maybe doesn't have thousands of followers and doesn't have like a big following, does that become kind of less appealing, or are you always looking out for the work?
Yeah, I think I think for us, I don't think that following, like clout itself, can get you signed or make us want to work with you. The work has to be good. It's more about the presentation of your work looking good. I don't really get excited about loads of followers. There are thousands of directors with hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of followers that I can see through that and see why they've got those followers. Like, they either work with really big artists, or that, you know, there's reasons why. And a good EP hopefully will see that's you're still looking at the work. So the work being presented well is important. However, I will say it definitely does get in the way for clients. I think brands, and more I'm feeling brands are excited. Brands know they're celebrities. Like, some directors are actually celebrities now. And I've literally had a client say, oh, we want to work with this person. And they were one of the three directors in the bid. And they already knew who they were because they're a very successful, massive name. And it's kind of, you kind of up against that, where it's like, oh, yeah, we want to work with them because they work with Kim K or they work with whoever. And of course, yeah, they're great talents. They might be great talents too, but it definitely gets in the way there when they become a celebrity, totally.
Everywhere you look, there's star fuckers. So it's going to be the same, whether it's Instagram followers or, you know, whether or not you've got British Arrows, the one that they've heard of the most is always, not always, but quite often, is going to be the more desirable option.
I think particularly for social and PR agencies, it's a decision factor, unfortunately, but that is the reality.
Just because it's like you guys obviously have the head on you to kind of navigate that, but it's the kind of people on the other side of the decision making that you kind of have to not worry about. But like, I get is it a fact that is that another bigger?
Yeah, I like that question, Harry. It's because it is. I genuinely do. I love that question.
Just you are correct.
I think we're actually coming. That's you know what? That's it. I mean, eight.
If that's all right with everyone, that's going to be it. We just want to say a massive thank you to The Gate Plus.
Yeah.
Our producer, Jack Kirkwood. Anastasia and Chessie, the marketing team behind all this.
And Emma.
And Emma Damison, who sorted out the Lucky Saints downstairs. She marketing as well.
Yeah, and also just thank everyone who's just like tuned into the podcast and like has a genuine interest. Because like, we love doing it, but I guess we hope you... I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're just trying to, you know.
We hope you enjoy it.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming tonight. And there's more beers down.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks.